Welcome back to Finding the Edge podcast. I'm Garrett Boyum, joined with Brock Hammett. And today we have another great guest with us, George Zirkle. I know George from working with him in California. George is currently the pitching coordinator for MSI, which stands for Maple Zone Sports Institute, which is located just outside of Philadelphia. George is also pursuing his master's degree in motor learning at Columbia University. I hope today you enjoy our conversation with George Zirkle. Let's begin. Analyzing. Finding the edge. So George, how has things been going at MSI?
Dude, we're so busy right now. It's awesome. It's awesome. You got all the pro guys that are, they're pretty much rolling. A couple guys went away for like the holidays and weren't around a lot last week, but now they're getting into pens for the next couple weeks, and then live tentatively starting January 10th. So we're getting into the thick of it. It's cool. Guys are looking good, progressing well.
What have you been doing with kind of the pro guys and their throwing programs, and just kind of what does a typical day look like working with those guys?
So my morning hours, I'm open 10 to 1 along with Rob Rabina. So we're both 10 to 1 with the pro guys. There's usually a group that's in right at 10 o'clock and then another group that'll be in at, 11:30, depending on the day. Then another couple guys will come in at like 12:15, 12:30. So they'll do the warm up upstairs, come downstairs with me, throw, do whatever drills or long toss or whatever they're working on for the day. And then, then they'll go upstairs and do their lift. What I started doing more of with those guys is just getting them more off the mound, more frequently. So like early on, there weren't too many guys that I had off the mound, like during their initial on ramp. But now that we're starting to get into, mid December and January, February, they'll be off the mound. Usually full go pens like twice a week. And then, another short box day, and then I'll incorporate some of their plyos off the mound as well.
Gotcha. When did you guys start their on-ramp, and how long was their on-ramp process?
Everyone was a little different. So there were a couple of guys. Everyone who came in, I met with them and talked with them. And we just outlined previous and what their goals for the off season were, throwing preferences, so like what they've done in the past, what they like, what they don't like, and then an outline of how we're going to do it. So I would say most guys were shut down for September and October, or if they were playing in September, shut down for October. Couple guys are in the fall league. They're shut down like into, past Thanksgiving, I think. There were a handful of guys that didn't want to shut down, or they wanted to still throw light once a week or twice a week. So I was fine with that. I'm not at those point with the pro guys. The biggest thing that I've gotten is that they have a pretty good idea of what works for them and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then what they want to change. So their programming stuff was very much it's very much a conversation of, hey, what are you looking to get better at? Right. This is what I think you should do. This is what this is what a couple guys, hey, I need to shut down for a month. Like, I just don't want to look at a baseball. I don't want to throw. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That gives us still plenty of time. To get you on ramped, make any changes we want to make, whether it's mechanical stuff, velocity work or both, or any pitch design work, you know, that gives us plenty of time to still get you where you got to be. And then from there, you know, they start their on-ramp. So typical on-ramp, a guy would be anywhere between like 4 and 6 weeks.
Okay.
Usually by the end of week three or end of week four, start getting into some more higher effort throwing. And for that, everyone was different. There's a handful. I have a program for 21 pro guys right now. So I would say offhand, maybe eight to 10 did pull downs, in some capacity. A lot of them, there are a handful of guys that have done it in the past and they said they didn't like it. If anyone had, you know, injury history that was kind of substantial, or they're like, hey, like I'm doing, you know, plyos for the first time, I don't really feel like I need to do pull downs too. That was factored in and their programs were adjusted and built out to reflect that. So some guys, their higher effort stuff was just like max distance long toss. Couple guys I had go like 6.54 velo pens, so you're still getting that overweight, underweight training effect, but just not going full go with pull downs. There's more than one way to train velocity. Not stuck into one way, you know.
How did the semester end up finishing for you?
Semester was good. Couple decent sized papers that I had to write. The one was I did like a small lit review on different throwing interventions to improve throwing perform or different interventions to improve throwing performance in youth athletes.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, for people that are listening, George is going to school for motor learning at Columbia. So
yeah, so I finished semester one, took a motor learning theory class, and then that paired with a motor learning lab. So you got to like reinforce and apply some of the principles, some of the theories that we went over in class. So it was a good good exposure to some different ways to look at things.
Any specific takeaways from the class that you've been able to apply at MSI?
I would say, so one of the papers that we read for class, and I wrote a little report on it, it was again someone else, but it's called the optimal motor learning theory. So optimal stands for I'm gonna look it up right now.
It's Wolf, right? Was that?
Yeah. So optimizing performance through intrinsic motivation and attention for learning. I feel like that paper filled in some of the gaps that existed in like dynamic systems theory. Regarding like the psychological aspects, and more specifically addressing the individual's motivation, and how important that is to their training and their performance, and then their learning too. So.
What does that look like for you, you know, developing relationships with athletes, you know, and kind of understanding like their motivation as far as like designing a program based off of like how do you like factor in like their motivation into your coaching style?
So with everyone that comes in, we're going to have a conversation. And whether it's a pro guy or a 10-year-old, what are you looking to work on? What have you done in the past that works? And then we're going to map out how to do it. Now, obviously, with different athletes, there's different ages. You get vastly different answers. Mm-hmm. But for like a high school guy, it's just about saying like, hey, I'm open to things that are important to you. And if something's really important to you, I'm cool with that being in your program because it's your program. It's not, I'm writing your program, but it's your program. So you give them ownership of it, give them ownership and, of things right away. And that helps reinforce and build that trust and then that buy-in. Because mm-hmm. There's so many guys, like, whether it's pro or high school or college, that they have throwing programs, and they're like, I don't even like this, or I'm not going to do this, or this program is stupid. And it's like, well, what? Like, it's your program. It shouldn't be – your throwing program shouldn't be like what someone else says. It should be people working together to find out what works for you, because silver bullet, there's nothing that works for everyone.
Right. I think that once you kind of like, in a way, I don't want to say concede, but once you discover like what is really important to them and you can kind of like build around that, and then they, you give them a small win and then you kind of get to add in like the other stuff, and it's like, well, they had a hand in this, and then you can kind of put, I guess, the meat and bones, or like what you feel is important for him to get better at. And then, like you said, better buy-in because, he helped come up with it too.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's one pro guy who's like, I don't want to do any weighted ball or any plyo ball stuff. Or he just does like reverse throws and pivot picks. And he's like, I just want to do long toss. Like, that's what's worked for me. That's what I want to do. It's like, okay. That's fine, right? I have to build out the program that you want, because that's the program you're ultimately going to do. Mm-hmm. If I write that guy a program with 7 different plyo drills, this is not going to get done, so no one gets anything out of it. Because then I get frustrated, right? I'd spent time writing this program that the athlete's not following, so now, the typical thing would be, he's disrespecting me or something like that, right? And then the athlete's like, well, I don't even want to do that anyway. That's not what I asked for. No one gets anywhere. So instead it's like, okay, yeah, we can do these things. And then if things come up in your training or something doesn't feel right, or you're trying to work on something mechanically, all right, hey, maybe we try this with the 1-pound ball because you can only do it the one way with the baseball for now, right? You move that way for now. Or the weighted ball will give you better feel. Okay. Sure, let's try it. Sort of just wait for, when the student's ready, the teacher will emerge type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an old saying. I don't really know exactly where it comes from, but like, a poor program that's executed perfectly will have better effects than, a perfectly written program that the athlete doesn't follow,
Yeah, sure. Rapidly.
Eric Cressy likes to quote that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that's a Cressy one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
that's the principle of it. It's like, hey, if this is it's your program, so we need to work together to build it out. Mm-hmm. And if that's not, that's my job, is to make sure that these guys are getting better and having conversations and, communicating what they feel they need. Now, for the vast majority of guys, it's, you're following your plyo program with some long toss and bullpens or pull downs or whatever else. But everyone has a say. Everyone has a say in their drills and their overall, their career. It's their career.
Yeah, I feel like I've been dominating some of the talking points here. So I'll ask this one and then kind of let Garrett kind of take lead. But how do you balance, you know, like you said, with the one pro guy that doesn't want to do any weighted ball stuff? How do you, that's just like one example. How do you kind of work around, you know, athletes that are really, I guess, skittish of certain drills or exercises that you know will be like very beneficial for them, like in particular?
How do you get them to eat their veggies, essentially?
Right.
I mean, if there's something specific that an athlete comes to me and says, hey, I want to work on this, I say, all right, I have this idea, or I have this drill or movement that I've used in the past that works. Do you want to try it? Yeah, I'll try it. You know, my torso's too far forward or my arm's out of whack. I'll try this. So I kind of wait until there's, I guess they come to me and say like, hey, this is something, you know, something feels off. Or if I notice it, you know, hey, like this is a little out of sync. Like, let's try this. Okay. Yeah, sure. You know, no, I don't get a ton of pushback from guys when I approach them and say, hey, do you want to try something? Right. I put the ball in their court. And if they don't, okay, that's fine. You know, keep doing your thing.
Gotcha.
I guess my question was going to be to follow back up or to backtrack back to your lit review. I'm super interested to hear more about the articles or studies that you spent a lot of time getting to know well.
Yeah.
Do you remember what some of the, you know, you don't necessarily have to know the titles, but like kind of what were some of the findings of the different papers that you were doing your lit review on? What were kind of the major points that you highlighted when you wrote the paper?
Let me pull up my notes.
Did you actually do annotations? I was supposed to do annotations for my research proposal, and then I've forgot to do it, but I still got the majority of the points I needed in that class.
So what I did is I found the papers that I wanted to take a look at. Then I reviewed all of them individually.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically like taking notes from, you know, the goals of the paper, the participants, the experimental structure, the results, conclusion, and any discussion stuff. And I write a little bit about that. And that gave me different buckets to the papers in. And that's how I designed my review. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask about what were some of the main papers? And then you said you were looking at some youth stuff. What were kind of the main findings of the youth stuff? What things did you even learn about, like how people set up research and how to even try to interpret research papers?
All right. I'll start with the, like, the buckets that I put the papers in.
Mm-hmm.
So there were six papers. One used professional handball players, but it was they had a good, like, that paper in particular was taking a look at like velocity and accuracy trade-off.
Mm.
So I was like, well, this isn't the same population, but this is definitely relevant to at least what I'm interested in, and I can tie that in. Mm-hmm. So that paper in particular was it was the influence of instruction on velocity and accuracy of overarm throwing. So What they did is they gave these professional handball players different tasks. So one was throw as fast as possible. Another was throw as fast as possible and try to hit the target. Another one was hit the target and throw as fast as possible. Another one was hit the target and try to throw as fast as possible. And the last one was hit the target. So it goes from this, you know, this decline of like, or this change in task prioritization. And what they found is that as the priority shifted toward accuracy, velocity went down, which is what you'd expect. But accuracy did not go up.
Oh, that's
accuracy was pretty, yeah, accuracy was pretty much the same throughout the four different conditions. So the throw as fast as possible, they didn't count that towards the accuracy equation, but the other four conditions, they did. So it was interesting that, yeah, the whole, like, you know, take a little off and throw more strikes kind of mantra didn't really stack up in, you know, they were throwing to a target that was half a meter by half a meter, and it was 7 meters away and like shoulder height or head height, something like that.
Somewhere all of Greg Maddox's Twitter just cried out all together collectively upon, you know, the finding of that study.
Yeah, just take a little off, throw some strikes.
I mean, it's interesting though. I mean, even my personal experience is like, I've noticed that at least when I don't try to throw as hard as I can, it tends to go a little bit more where I want it to, but it also follows the same findings of that study that my accuracy doesn't necessarily completely improve. Because I do think a lot of it has to do with sequencing. And I think sometimes when people go max intent, they go out of sequence. And for other people, yeah, it cleans up their sequence. And I think for some people, going slightly sub-max actually allows them to sequence correctly and gain a little bit more. But I don't think you gain a ton more by trying to go easier, like way easier. Like, just like the study said, you're not going to gain, you don't gain any more accuracy after that initial bump.
Right. And it's almost like there's very, at least you see with like older pitchers, like the pro guys, like there's very few times where they're just trying to throw as hard as possible with zero regard where the ball goes. Mm-hmm. Like even if we'll have guys on for a bullpen, we'll just have a velo pen and they're just, you know, throwing fastballs as hard as they can. They're still like pretty much in control of their body. They're still around the target and hitting the, like, and they're pretty close to it. You know, they're not like missing, you know, a 6 foot by 6 foot screen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, there's still some attentional capacity being spent on accuracy. Whereas like, you know, I mean, even like a pull down, like, you see, yeah, throw as hard as you can, but it's usually like throw it as hard as you can, but it's got to go straight, because if you are missing arm side by, you know, if you miss the, if it like doesn't read on the gun or something, you missed it that badly. There's probably some, it's probably one, it's probably not as hard as you can throw it. And two, there's probably a you know, a mechanical issue or a timing issue going on there.
Was there any other studies that you looked at to kind of wrap up this topic?
Let's see. So there was another one that involved level of task manipulation, based on, and it also involved some knowledge of result and knowledge of performance. So,
what kind of task were they manipulating? Or what was the task?
So, the It was a group of second and third grade children. They were doing overarm throwing. I think they were throwing a tennis ball. And there were four different groups. One group received the instruction to throw the ball. The next group received instruction to throw the ball hard. The third group received instruction to throw the ball hard and was given velocity feedback after each throw. And the final group was told to throw the ball hard, got velocity feedback after each throw, and they got a cue after each throw based on their prior throwing performance. So the way that those groups were split up was a little bit interesting because the authors split it up where, like, the kids that pre-tested throwing harder were in the groups that got the KR, and the groups that were like lower or worse, that started, they only got like the one group that got the cue to throw the ball hard and the other group that got the cue to just throw the ball. So the way they split that up was pretty interesting. I don't know if like if I think that could have skewed some of the results.
For sure. You would think that they would want to do a more randomized groups.
But also like I also see the other side of it where if you're like you don't give the same cues to it's based on skill level. So you don't give the same program to people of widely varying skill levels.
Well, I was thinking like they're kids, and if you're giving
Yeah.
knowledge of results to the kids that don't throw very hard next to a kid that throws really hard, you could have some, kids feeling bad about themselves or something. Who knows? I don't
Yeah.
know.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's valid. That's valid. Like if you if you're the worst person in the group or someone next to you is outperforming you time after time after time, that's definitely going to have an impact on like your level of self-efficacy and just how you interpret like your own ability to perform the skill, which if you think you're worse than most others at doing something, that'll negatively impact your performance.
I guess my thought now is like the way that they could solve that is like each kid would perform whatever their task like alone or isolated just with the person running the study or the people running the study. That way you could eliminate that issue. I don't know. It's interesting because those were all the things that I had to kind of think about when I was doing my research proposal. And so you have to think about like, oh, what are ways to deal with any sort of limitations that come up with your study? And then it's kind of interesting because a lot of times the way that people do their studies sometimes just has to do with the logistics of how they were able to realistically, how much access did they have to the participants, and all that sort of stuff. So.
That definitely has an impact on how your results are gonna go, or how your study's gonna go. And then and then for the other class, I designed an experiment.
Ooh.
So the gist of that would just be to, like, if my thing was you'd have three different groups, three different, groups of like youth baseball players, and you'd give one group KR, one group KP, and one group KR and KP, and see which group improved the most in pitch velocity. Now, some of the limitations of that, of course, are like, did they actually improve movement form, right? So is there a way to analyze their movement form on top of their performance on just throwing velocity? Another one would be like, did the kids actually learn how to throw harder, or did their performance improve, or did they learn? right? Because that ties into like the idea of like performance versus improved performance doesn't mean learning has occurred. So are those improvements transient?
So you would, so basically what you're saying is you'd need to have a retention test to see if they were able to actually retain it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How was, I saw you presented at a clinic. How did that go? What did you present on?
That was back. Yeah, I did, we had a throwing, we had a seminar here at MSI. So it was me, Rob Rubina, who's the head of sports performance, and John Herding, who is, the head PT at the training room, which is our PT place that's in-house, which is great for obvious reasons. But so I presented on debunking weighted ball myths. So like a basic overview of why weighted balls, you know, they don't work or they cause injury or just some outlining some basic info about weighted balls to help help spread the word.
What were some of the main things that you know, you were giving for takeaways for, or that you wanted players and parents and potentially coaches to take away from that talk in regards to dispelling those myths?
The biggest thing I'd say is that weighted balls are a tool, and like anything else, they can be used properly or they could be misused. And it really has to, it depends on the implementation of everything. You know, just doing a weighted ball program without strength and conditioning, without an evaluation, right? Without something that's going to test, you know, how you move both, whether it's range of motion, flexibility, power, in addition to a throwing evaluation where you're evaluated on your mechanics and how you move and everything like that. And if you're not following a plan, you know, or if you're throwing once a week and that day, you know, throw once or twice a week and you get on and one day, oh, now we're doing pull downs, right? Like that ain't it. Mm-hmm. So just outlining that, it's a tool. It needs to be implemented properly, and they're not dangerous.
So you mentioned that at your facility, you've got a head of sports performance, and then also an in-house PT.
Yep.
So how do you, as a throwing coach, throwing coordinator, how do you interact with those two entities like sports performance, strength and conditioning, and then PT? Like, how do you incorporate, you know, those two areas into your coaching, and how do you communicate between those two different facets?
Yep. So when someone schedules an eval, they'll eval with myself and Rob Rubina. So Rob will look at, put him through an FMS, put him through range of motion, upper body, lower body, a few other tests, have him run like a 10-yard sprint, 5-10-5, broad jump. So he'll test them through that stuff. I will take the athlete through a series of plyo drills that, and ask them to do different things, show me how you move, how you throw. And then we'll go together and we'll break everything down. So right away, I'll know if an athlete's severely lacking some range of motion. How is that going to present in the throw? Mm-hmm. So I can program and cue around it. Or go head on, you know, if someone's lacking like shoulder horizontal abduction, like their scap load, so to speak. If they're lacking that, right, they're going to get scap retraction throws, and they're going to get some work on their arm action, if that's, you know, if that lacking, if that presents in their throws.
Right.
If someone lacks shoulder flexion, right, they have trouble getting overhead. Do they compensate? How do they compensate? Do they compensate? You'll see two common ones are either their like elbow doesn't get up, right? They have poor shoulder abduction at foot plant, or they'll try to like extend through the rib cage. So identifying those things together with Rob helps me when I'm building out a program and helps me when I'm on the floor queuing guys.
Gotcha. So it sounds like,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like, at least if I'm understanding correctly, like after having conversation with, Rob, you can kind of see like from a strength and conditioning side, maybe, or a sports performance side, like what the deficiencies are, and then if the opportunity presents itself, doing certain drills that will help to improve that deficiency from a more like specific drill, like a, you know, throwing specific instead of, you know, maybe like a strength and conditioning, you know, like a lift exercise that would try to accomplish the same end goal of getting them to be proficient in a certain move.
Yeah. So like a good example of that, we have a high school athlete who lacking a little bit of shoulder flexion and he lacks some IR. So in his shoulder. So Rob has him do some PRI, some breathing exercises upstairs that help his flexion, help his IR. And then I'll incorporate some of that cueing into his drills or into how I work with him on the floor. So, you know, I'll tell him, when you throw this, you know, go rib cage down, take a big deep breath. Okay, now you feel some tension in your core or you feel your rib cage is down, now throw. One athlete in particular would bring a balloon down with him and continue to do like PRI exercises in between his sets of throwing, which he did on his own. But I thought it was a really effective way to blend what's going on upstairs with Rob's stuff to what's going down on the throwing floor. You know, the tighter that loop can be, the better.
From a communication standpoint, between you and the other two, how do you keep that, you know, that loop tight, so to speak?
So with Rob, I mean, we talk daily. We'll go over if there's any athletes that we're having issues with and aren't getting the results we want. We'll discuss that. We had most of the evals in, so we use Track, which is Driveline software. It's great. I couldn't recommend it enough. Rob still has their lifting programs on pen and paper, which is fine. Like, I understand that. But we did have their physical evals. All those numbers were in Track over the summer and beginning of the fall, but we've kind of fallen off track with that. But anyway, like I'll know if a guy's lacking in range of motion or there's some red flag, I'll know. We'll make sure we communicate that. I know with the PTs, so guys only see PT as needed. That's not something they're like, they're independent of us. But if someone's going to see them, I'll talk to the PTs. What'd you guys go over? What did you find? What do you guys think we need to do or adjust on the throwing side? And they're great. They were like, they're super smart guys. So I've learned a ton from them. And getting to work with them on a daily basis has been invaluable.
I think too, like one of the things you noted on like having something like Track where you have all of your, data and what you're doing from a programming standpoint, whether that's assessments or whatever, like having something that's very easily accessible to, you know, see what somebody else saw and what they're doing, I think just helps when you're working with multiple people. And even sometimes when you're on your own, like just having that somewhere that's easily accessible, you know, while you're, say, for example, programming, you know, doing your throwing program, you can just probably just hit a tab and go look quick what was going on in their assessment to
yep.
make sure that, you know, what you're doing just to help with your programming. So I think that's super important to have some sort of a system set up and for coaches to have something like that. Brock, do you know of any other ways that people could even do that if they, say, didn't have track? Or even George, too. Like, if what were you doing before track?
Well, when I started, I came on in last February. And at that point, there were maybe 15, 20 athletes. So, and most of them are high school guys. So my main goal, and there was Google Sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So my main thing was getting them through February and getting them ready for high school. And then as soon as March hit, we got track.
Hmm.
That was like, yeah, that was my first initiative, was like, we need something that I can program athletes at scale and track results and be able to look back and see, okay, like this athlete's getting better. This athlete isn't. As a whole, athletes are improving by X mile an hour. You know, and there's, you know, a couple outliers or whatever it is, right? But I said, we need a really good system in place, and Driveline has provided that above and beyond what I could have asked for.
Tell me a little bit more about, like, kind of the dashboards and stuff. I played around with it a little bit, but I had to build out everything in it in order for me to actually do anything with it. So I didn't, unfortunately, end up getting to see what it could really do. So for other people, kind of explain a little bit more what kind of data you can pull from track.
All right. So first thing with the dashboard. So my main dashboard that I open up to will give me, I can hit a tab and I'll have all the athletes' programs for the day. So I can look really quick and I could say, all right, I have this guy's a bullpen. These guys have bullpens, pull downs. This guy's got a recovery day. This guy's throwing a short box. So I have an idea of basically when I get in, I can mentally map out how things are going to go for that day and who needs to do what.
And this is better than the calendar thingies that we had at 108.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, but like, that was going to be my other suggestion, like for people, if they don't have access to track, is create something in Excel. I mean, if you learn Excel, you can do some crazy stuff with that.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, at a small scale, right? Google Sheets or Excel is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Like, if you're a college coach, I mean, track's all, like, I recommend track number one, but you can definitely do enough and do plenty with Google Sheets or Excel and have everything together when you have, you know, 15 or 20 arms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right now I'm looking at our list of active athletes in house and 137.
Yeah.
So I can't do that in Google Sheets.
Right. Yep. What kind of data output too, though, can you get? Cause I think they can provide, you know, like you were saying, progress on velos, or what other things does track give you in terms of like visualizing data, or, you know, being able to see what's going on with your athletes?
Yeah, so their One of the things, so Driveline also, to their credit, they keep adding to track, which makes it that much more just valuable for us. One of the things that they added recently was a like custom data input, so you could create your own data inputs to track whatever you want to track. Limited to like velocity. It was, they're pretty simple like functions, but it's good. I was playing around with that the other day. But what we'll look at, so everyone will get a wellness questionnaire when they come in. We can also look at, so look at,
is that in track? Down, can you put that into track?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
nice.
In track. Okay. Yeah, they have their own, they have their own own wellness questionnaire that I really like. It's super simple.
Did they
take guys?
Is that like pre-built in track?
Yeah.
Or can you customize it too?
That's pre-built. I could. The best thing about Driveline is if I emailed them and said, "Hey, can I have a wellness questionnaire with these 10 things?" They would do it.
Oh, okay, sweet. That is super awesome.
Yeah.
Because getting everything in one spot, I mean, I've been collecting wellness data in Google Sheets through Google Forms, but you always want to look at things together with whatever else you're doing. So to have everything in one spot, I think that sounds fantastic. Are you able to kind of look at like, okay, here's what a guy's throwing session is, and then based upon their subsequent wellness questionnaires, like to see kind of how they reacted to those throwing sessions?
Yeah. Yeah, for the guys that are consistent filling it out,
mm-hmm.
yes, which that's still an issue, even
for
though
sure,
it's the first
sure.
thing in the first thing in the program is the wellness questionnaire, and you know, guys still skip it. But it's,
I feel your struggle or pain with that. So
yeah. I still get to being on the floor. Like I still get to have those conversations of, hey, how are you feeling today?
Mm-hmm.
So if someone says, hey, I'm sore, hey, my arm's sore, or hey, I slept 4 hours last night, right? Then we're obviously going to make some changes to the program.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I can, I do have the capability of like of saying, all right, someone did pull downs on Friday and they said they were sore Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I guess they pushed themselves a little too much there. Or on the other hand, they did pull downs on Friday and they felt great, no soreness at all on Saturday. Well, that's really encouraging. Right? That means that implies that at least we're getting a training effect without overly taxing the body, which mm-hmm. is what we're going for here. But so like what I'll look at, general stuff, is your wellness questionnaire, pull down velo, your velo off the mound, plyo velo. That's the extent of it. That's the extent of it. And then I'll have in a calendar, I'll have all their days mapped out past and then however long, you know, their training block is.
So, George, one of the things that we typically do as we wrap up pods is we just kind of ask, you know, what different resources or material has been influential in your coaching career? Like what are the few things that kind of shaped you that left like the biggest impact that you would maybe recommend to other people that are listening?
It's a good question. The biggest thing I would say is read a lot and read from a wide range of sources. And then try to apply the things that you learn,
mm-hmm.
whether it's coaching or programming or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like biggest impact, single thing is I think the thing that started me on this whole like baseball journey is I read the entire Driveline blog summer of like 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all like it was just, there's just so much good stuff there that helped shape my process and how I view baseball training.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yeah, I just recommended that to an athlete that I'm working with who wants to get into coaching at some point. I said, where should I start with? I said, read, go back to the Driveline blog circa 2009, 2010, and have some fun. Because nice. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and have a conversation. I think that, I think a lot of people are going to get some good stuff out of this just for, you got a unique perspective and just like how efficient it seems like you're able to communicate across different skill sets in your facility. It was really, really awesome to hear. And definitely the master's through Columbia, also very cool as well.
Yeah, it's a fun program. Learn a lot, learn it fast. So,
George, where can people connect with you?
See, on Twitter at George_Zirkle. I think it's the same on Instagram.
How do you spell your last name? Because I know people who are like myself would misspell it.
So first name George, G-E-O-R-G-E, last name Zirkle, Z-I-R-K-E-L.
Perfect.
You can also see a lot of their guys follow MSI Baseball on Instagram or Twitter. We'll be posting. I post some stuff on there sometimes too.
Is your username on Instagram the same as Twitter?
I believe so.
Perfect. So you all should follow George on social. So awesome.
Yeah, man. Trying to build the clout.
Yep.
Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed. Till next time.